sexy, spooky bones.
Welcome to the Skeleton Boys, a horror movie podcast. I'm Rolando.
Jake Blow. Sucking on glizzies all summer long. Yeah. Halloween glizzies coming up next. I'm sorry. We already passed Halloween. Thanksgiving glizzies.
Yeah.
Sucking those turkey dogs.
Turkey dogs. Yeah.
The amount of memes I get now featuring glizzies is really funny.
I just revealed that at work that I didn't know what that was, and everybody's like, "What? You didn't know what that was, old man?" So yeah.
And in other news, I'm not sure if it'll still be around by the time this episode comes out, which we definitely recorded today on Thanksgiving. No, wait, the week before Thanksgiving. Week before Thanksgiving. Tim Robinson, my former boss, now is working with Plant Power Fast Food, the vegan thing in Hollywood. And he's got the vegan Coney dog. Coney glizzies, sorry.
The fuck?
They look really good.
I was told not to be a glizzy gobbler. Don't look it up. If you're hearing a show, don't look what that is.
Don't be a glizzy gobbler and eat some blue waffles. Also, oh, don't look that up.
Anyways,
and that's our review. Of
that's our show. Two,
Follow the House of Usher.
We should prompt our fans. We should put a poll up: Stephen Perry or Freddie Mercury.
Freddie Mercury.
Oh, where do you stand on that? I know you don't like the song, but where do you stand on that discussion we were having off air? Stephen Perry or Freddie Mercury?
I prefer Freddie Mercury. I think there's a wider range of songs, and the musical style was always rock and roll, but there was always like different sort of style of songs on each of the albums.
Yeah, yeah.
I feel like Journey is kind of, they were really good at what they did. Kind of like Kiss. They're really good at what they did, right?
They just did it forever.
Forever. And they have one song that I kind of like, and then
that's my argument. I mean, yeah, like that's my argument too with AC/DC. Like, once you heard one AC/DC song, you've heard every AC/DC song that's ever existed.
Yeah. Luckily for AC/DC, I feel like are the embodiment of rock and roll, so it's fine. It's like,
true.
It is like some of their songs, I'm like, it's the same fucking four chords, but I'm like, oh my God, this song's better. You know, it's the same thing, but I just think it's better.
Yeah. Yeah, same. Same thing about Freddie Mercury. He's much more, his music, the music, the band was much more dynamic.
Yeah.
More, you know what I mean? They had a bigger, wider variety of sounds. So. They did a rap song too, right? So another one bites the dust. It's kind of a rap song.
Oh yeah.
Or it's been covered by rap people, I guess.
They did a heavy metal song, kind of Stone Cold Crazy.
Mm-hmm.
They had that like crazy
bicycle
little thing
song
called Love.
It's like
crazy little thing called Love is probably my favorite Queen song.
Country song, yeah.
There's also like a bunch of. Oh man, there's a lot of really good songs in the Queen catalog.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just saying, I don't remember the song Stephen Perry did with David Bowie. Oh, wait, because it doesn't exist.
It's true. Exactly. Stephen Perry, wherever you are now, we see you.
See you. Yeah. I mean, we don't see you because we have no idea where you're, but
you have no idea. You know what we
mean. I guess you're on your journey, but I'm and that's our review of the Red what Mask of the Red Dizzies.
Yeah, what can we do anymore? And welcome to the show. This week we are reviewing No One Will Save You. As always, John will give us the plot in 5 words. We give our first thoughts, then we go into a deep spoiler analysis. But first, we go back to TV Corner. We're watching episode 2 of The Fall of the House Usher, titled The Masquerade of the Red Death. So when I saw this, I meanly sent notices eyes to you that you should probably watch this episode. Maybe, like, and this is what Flanagan does well, shocking ending to this episode. Yeah. Shocking ending. I think so far.
A lot of information and then a shocking ending.
Exactly. Like, there's a lot of, like, you know, set people, like, I'm not crazy about this story that he's telling and how they're incorporating this sort of, like, I guess they're using the recent court thing about the big pharma people, about how, like, they can't be held liable for the people's deaths, even though they did put Oxycontin out and they did know it was addictive and said it wasn't. It was just for pain or whatever, but they kind of lied about it. And then, nobody can sue them. You guys in court, they said that nobody can sue them for liability of that. So I think it sounds like Mike Flanagan took that, you know, horrifying reality and sort of incorporated it with this Edgar Allan Poe story, and basically going to exact revenge on this family, the Usher family.
I mean, also, Kate Siegel's character is basically the representation of what the strikes are about right now. like the whole AI system, she's trying to push it, like, imagine it can make me billions and I don't have to, like, basically hire other people. And I was like, oh wow, okay, so Mike's just really being contemporary.
It goes back to that adage of, like, shit, like, shitty people. Like, I mean, it's interesting when you make your characters are real shitty, they're kind of like villainous in some way, and then they're Mike Flanagan's making this story about how they're going to kind of get their comeuppance or, like, their revenge for whatever, whatever you think is, whatever they did. Because clearly it seemed like, Bruce Greenfield's and Mary McDonald's character, like, did something younger, made some sort of pact, right?
Yeah. With what's her face. Now we know, is she going by Varna? Carla New Museum?
She's going by Varna, and I got a spoiler of what it is. Just Varna. I saw a poster. Yeah. I saw a poster of who she is, so.
Oh, she's
like to know?
Edgar Allan Poe.
Yes, she's the author. Edina Allan Poe.
Major plot twists.
Major plot twists. But yes, we'll talk about the ending in a bit, but is there anything else you liked about the episode?
Oh, that I did have to scroll back a couple of times to make sure I caught information. There was a couple scenes where I was like, I'm not really paying attention, and then I would go back, oh, okay, that's important to know. But I'm glad I did, because I didn't catch Zach Guilford as young Usher. Took me a second to be like, oh, fuck, it's him.
But
other than that, we're okay with spoilers in this, right?
We can spoil it away. No, there's no warnings.
Very happy they killed off my least favorite character immediately.
He was my least favorite character too. Thank God. And from what I understand, it's going to be in order of their birth, because we know where this is going. They're all going to die. All his children die, which is kind of like they're just telling how they died. And so there's, from what I understand, it's like the youngest died first. So they're pretty much going to go in order. So the oldest will die last.
Because I had churned my, like, away from the screen for a second to get hot, and then all of a sudden I get a fruit fly, one fruit fly, and that's just going to bug me. I was not paying attention for a second because I was responding to, like, a text or something. and I had my monitor speakers on while I was watching it on my laptop. So I have my full setup, the same setup I use for recording this. Mm-hmm. And when he's giving the story about the comic book, like, the people that hold the gold make the rules, the Wizard of Id, which I had completely forgotten about that comic, by the way. When he's talking about that, and then there's like a fucking, you see the sun walking in the background, but I had completely missed all of that. So when I looked up, it was right at the moment where he pops up and he's looking directly at his son's like acid wash face and all that.
Yeah.
And the speakers, because my speakers are loud, boomed. I was like, fuck, I was so scared.
Oh shit.
And then when I rewound it, I was like, if I had been paying attention, I would have fucking seen him walking towards the camera.
He was, yeah, kind of. Yeah, he was like, it wasn't like a sudden thing. He just sort of walked up to it.
But that scared the shit out of me.
It worked.
Yeah. Good old Mikey.
Yeah.
We call him Flanny.
Done it again. Flanny. Yeah. Flannel.
Because he likes Phalange. Flannel and flan. So.
Yeah, I wasn't a big fan of the latter part of this episode. I was actually questioning, where's this episode going? I was kind of like bored with the story. For the most part. Is it weird? One thing I didn't like is, why do they all have these weird, like, kinky sex things? Like, they all have like this weird thing, right? For the most part. That we've seen.
Oh yeah, I guess so. He was definitely the, like, the kinkiest, but
like, he was dating two people, a boy and a girl or whatever, yeah.
I feel like
at orgies. So,
and this was all a product of his upbringing, because he was a neglected one, because he was a mistake, and he's not actually a part of the family. So the more they went into that, the more I felt bad for him. But I was like, he's gonna die soon though, and it's not even his fault. And then it's really nice that Verna kind of explains all that to him too before he dies, like, you know, it's really sad because it's not your fault.
Yeah.
Which I was like, that's fucked up. But I do like that she made the wife who was going to cheat on E.T.'s homie.
Huh? Oh. Oh, yeah. We don't know if she's dead or not, right?
I feel like she
presumably
ran away. Yeah.
Or, yeah, she died.
Because
she definitely...
Yeah, Verna warned her to get out of there. And I think Verna, it wasn't... Like, Henry Thomas's wife was questioning it, because I think Verna has the power of influence, is what we kind of saw.
Yeah.
When she made the bartenders get out.
So, yeah, the way I saw that, it's kind of like they weren't participating in the thing. They were working the event. That's why maybe they were innocent. So maybe that's why she told them specifically, like, hey, you know, you leave, which they did. They exited before they locked themselves in.
Because she's the angel of death, I'm assuming.
She's something like that.
Because, I mean, it was just like, obviously she's not...
real. She's not a real person. Yeah.
Because she didn't age at all from like 30 plus years, 40 years or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But to be fair, I don't know. I can't really tell last time Carla... You know, that's what you say, your last
still
name.
Still looks the same, dude. It's been like... 20 years and she still looks exactly the same, dude. Amazing.
Just like, doesn't matter because it's not important. But from Sin City to this, just like a stone cold fox. Like, yeah, of course I'm going to cast her in this role, like, every time. I mean, I'm sure she wants to do other stuff, but like, fuck, she like nails it. She brings something to it.
Yeah, and she's a constant collaborator with Flanagan. Like, she's pretty much been in everything he's ever made. I think,
yeah.
You should check out Gerald's Game.
That one's a good
fucking
one.
Fucking great.
I do like...
Oh, did you see it?
You know what? We're talking about Stephen King adaptations, right? That's a good one. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That is actually a great adaptation. Yeah, it's excellent. And a really challenging book to make. So the fact that Flanagan made it, props to him. Aside from that, it kind of just seems like... Did you get this sense? I didn't get this until I saw the second episode, that maybe the father or whatever, his name's Bruce Greenwood's Roderick Usher, he's dying. Did you get that sense? They kind of briefly talk about how he fainted.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? Oh my God. His last funeral.
That's right. But that reminded me of that scene where his granddaughter walks in on him and the his secretary.
No, that's his wife. They explain that.
Oh, in the first episode. I was wondering. Yeah. Okay. I did remember that, but the way the conversations went, I was like, maybe I misread some or misunderstood something in the first episode.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But then her whole explanation of how they met, and then she's a little too open about what she said and all that was really funny, but it's also like, it's kind of conversations you have with addicts, I think, where they, it's just like there's no filter because, you know, the brain's not catching up quick enough.
And this is the, what I gather is that Bruce Greenfield purposely married her because I believe that they did some kind of drug test trial on her that she lived. So my thing is that I think that he married her because for that reason, because she actually passed one of the tests of the drug trials. So I think that's why I think he's dying. He wants to take the pill or whatever, because they were arguing about in the first episode about human trials, like, yo, you have to get that thing. That's what that one of his daughters is
they also had it in this episode. Yeah, with the monkey, right? The
monkey,
the chimpanzee or whatever it was.
Yeah.
That's right.
So that's what I think is happening, is he's gonna die. Yeah, I'm assuming everybody dies.
Yeah, right? Everybody's gonna die. Because his new wife dies for sure also, because I think I saw her as one of the ghosts, I think.
I think she's there. So at the funeral, if I remember correctly, it's him, his sister, she's there, and Henry Thomas's daughter, who I suspect is the one talking to the government.
That's my guess too, but I you know what? It could also be Henry Thomas.
It could have been him as well, yeah.
I feel like he's just been lying about it because it's the easiest way to get out of this mess. Because what's her, the sister, his sister, what's her name? Mary McDonald's character, Madeline? I think it's Madeline.
Right, yeah.
She kind of casually mentions, like, well, back when I was, you know, basically informing the government, it was, like, easier to just do this. And it was, like, such a casual conversation throwaway line.
She knew how the government operates when they do informants.
Yeah.
Is the sense I got? Yeah. Okay, so we should probably talk about the ending of this fucking
show. Well, I was also going to mention his wife, I didn't realize was missing a leg or legs. I never paid attention to her legs, I guess.
I think so, yeah.
But in the story, she mentioned she lost her legs and then got this drug and didn't feel anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. So, oh man, what's his name? The youngest brother. It'd be easier Perry. If I knew. Perry, yes. Perry is going to throw a rager at one of the family's old pharmacy compounds. And
that Mark Hamill insistently says they don't own and kept telling Perry to shut up at a meeting.
Yeah, what is it? His Henry Thomas's character kind of like tells him, like, you know, tells him rightly, like, hey, shut up. We can't admit that we own these buildings because then it's liability.
Yeah,
and you know, and they're condemned and they're old. You know, they kind of were just old buildings, and they don't want to tear down or have any kind of anything to do with them. So Perry gets the idea of throwing one of those, like, I guess, like parties, like rich, super rich parties and stuff like that.
Kind of close to like Eyes Wide Shut, except like more drug induced and all that.
His big idea was to, at a certain moment, that in this main area, they were going to lock all the doors and throw water or rain or something, right? And they were going to have some sort of like orgy thing in the
yeah
think so.
When he goes and looks at that property and has this idea, he actually sees Verna on top of the building for a split second.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And then he doesn't question it when he sees her again. He's just like, I guess Verna has that sort of control. But yeah,
I guess he saw her and it was like, and then he saw her again at the party and it was like, oh, let me see who this is. I must have her or something, you know?
Yeah.
Intrigued by her, you know, fascinated with her. So what happens, John? What happens at the end of the episode?
They are all cleansed of their sins. and there's like what they said, like the number one NFL draft is there, and like somebody that works in, for the city, and like there are a bunch of important people are there, and they all get acid bathed to death, basically
into one giant, basically it turns into one like goo. It's all like, they're all gooey.
They basically become like, together they become their own society.
Yeah,
it kind of reminded me of that scene in Society.
It did.
Yeah.
Yeah. Amazing ending, just like body parts
and then
yells Verna and screams
coming out and talking to Perry one more time, and then taking off her skull mask and putting it on his face. And while that's happening, they had a cue of something blowing up in the background, and I thought it was super cool how like Verna is just so casually still doing everything, like that didn't bother her, and like disappears.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's how Perry died, and I don't know who's next. I don't know who the next kid is. Offhand.
I guess I don't either. I guess it would be the daughter, right? The one that we think is an informant also.
Well, no, she's the granddaughter. So, I believe it's Kate or Siegel or the other guy. Henry
Thomas?
Rahul Kohli. Oh, no, he's the oldest.
You're right. I think you're right with that one. It's probably going to be wrong.
Because I believe Henry Thomas and the redhead girl are the oldest.
Oh, okay.
And I think the, what's her name? The other, she wasn't in the episode. The doctor lady, the bald one.
Oh, she was for a little bit.
She's the oldest of the stepchildren, like the bastard kids, I believe. So I don't know where she falls in line there.
I can't tell her intentions. I don't know if she wants this thing to work desperately because she wants it to work, or I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Pretty good so far. Yeah, I'm really enjoying it. It was I like the, I'm not crazy yet about how he's like mixing the stories, but I do love that we're gonna get all of these deaths and how he kind of reveals them, and then sort of talk about who Verna is, and then like, and everybody and everything else going on, the mystery, kind of the central mystery to it.
Yeah.
So
also, what an interesting way to remix Closer.
Oh yeah, that was excellent. Good call. Like, yeah,
interesting.
Yeah,
like it really worked.
Yeah, worked excellent. It plays, that plays over of course against the big death orgy gooey scene.
I want to say, was it another Tool song? I mean, not Tool, Nine Inch Nails song at the beginning of the episode, but it was like one of those weird slow covers where I'm like, I don't do that, but then that, this was good. It was
yeah, this one.
Yeah. But yeah, cool. So that was No One Will Save You. Thank you for listening. As always, suck on those glizzies.
Yeah. Okay, cool. You want to move over to our main review of No One Will Save You? I'm actually really excited. You have not given me any tells or hints about how you're going to feel about this. So, John, do you want to give us the plot in 5 words?
Johnny.
5 words.
Plot summary.
Rolando, drum roll, please.
Sure doing. I just want to say Joaquin Phoenix did a great job portraying a man who can't find his way, tries to become a rapper. No. For No One Will Save You, coming in at number 3, Pearl takes on Jean Jacket.
Pearl takes on Jean Jacket. What am I not getting?
Pearl, Mia Goth. Jean Jacket was from Nope. I was trying not to give anything away, but because she's clearly not all right. Anyway, coming in at number two.
Well, you're breaking my brain. sucked out some glizzies.
You sucked out too many glizzies. You've had enough.
Too many glizzies, yeah.
Coming in at number two for No One Will Save You. Social Pariah likes new rocks. And coming in at number one for No One Will Save You. Illegal aliens take our jobs.
There it is. There it is. Yes. Damn you, aliens.
We get the political commentary.
Oh, man. Okay. John, what are your first thoughts? What will save you?
You know, there's something to be said about a lot of horror movies where they introduce the monster kind of right away. You know, it's, you know, once in a blue moon, it's a good thing. But most of the time, it's like, oh, I shouldn't have fucking done that. You know, this movie was stupid entertaining. I enjoyed the shit out of it. I went back a couple of times to rewatch parts because I was like, oh, did I miss something? Like, I was more excited to be like, what was that? What was that? And I have so many theories about it. And I did hear and read up something about one thing the director divulged about this alien race.
Interesting. Yes. I am surprised at how good this movie was.
It's a fucking movie, dude. I'm like, whoa, this is good.
It went places that I never could guess where this movie was going to go.
No,
I literally could not tell you. Like, it was completely every turn in this movie, I was baffled. And you know, and for the most part, I think they, like, it's one of those movies that, like, it's, you have to watch it multiple times because I feel like the direction is really clear about what it's trying to say. But it's like, the viewer has to kind of watch it several times to kind of catch up on what he's trying to, you know, actually convey in the story, because it's a wild ending, absolutely wild ending. I think most people are gonna fucking hate. I think that generally there's, you know, most people are gonna fucking hate the ending of this movie. There's, I mean, it's gonna be 50-50, honestly. To be honest, it's gonna be some people are gonna fucking love it, and there's gonna be some people that are gonna fucking hate it.
But I was Pearl, right? Because it turns into like the 1930s for some reason.
And It literally the IMDb plot summary or plot line of the summary of this movie is an exiled, angst-ridden homebody must battle an alien who's found his way into her home, which is literally the first 30 minutes of this movie. This movie's an hour and a half. And then from there, they have, you know, basically the first 30 minutes of this movie is the end of Signs. To kind of put it nicely. And then after that, it goes a million other places, you know, and which I thoroughly enjoyed. This was an excellent movie. And we haven't even talked about the fact that there's like no dialogue in this movie.
No,
there's like maybe a handful of lines said through this whole movie. And it's pretty much
because it's basically a home invasion as well. So you got to be just trying to keep quiet. And I got to say, I didn't realize how much I missed the whole your protagonist just can't catch a fucking break movie where it's just continuous, like, oh fuck, you think you're okay for a second, well now you gotta prepare because you've been like panicking, staying awake in the corner of a room.
I literally was at the edge of my seat. It was like, how, like, the new quote unquote threat, I'll try to keep it vague, comes up and it's like, how the fuck is she gonna get out of this, you know? Like, I was constantly dumped as they raise the stakes of the movie, like, how the fuck is this person going to get out of this?
It was like video game logic, right? Where it's like,
it progressively becomes
a harder boss.
There's absolutely crazy, cool alien designs. I really like thoughtful. They had different types of alien designs. Like, if you've seen the trailer, they have kind of shown a couple of them. Yeah. So I thought that was unique. Yeah, like, I was, especially towards the end, I was like, so surprised. And I think I kind of get the gist of what's going on for the most part.
There are a couple things I have a theory on.
We'll same, but
later, yeah.
Really impressed with was it Caitlin Dever?
Oh, she was great.
Excellent performance. She's excellent, and it's so much. She has no. She can't rely on any kind of like communication or dialogue, but they did an excellent job of conveying hers, you know, pain and anxiety, you know, without having to go through too much.
Just
you know?
How lonely she is, yeah.
Lonely she is, and how, like, she has, like, a traumatic event happen in her life, and so that kind of,
and
like,
she's alone, yeah.
She's alone because of it, and
I think super young. I think the assumption is she was born in 2000 is what I'm gathering from a tombstone I saw.
Oh, okay, yeah,
she, not that she's dead, but, like, I'm assuming she was born in 2000, so she's 23 now.
Right? Yeah, because they said it had been 10 years.
10 years.
So
yeah.
She was, yeah, 13 or 13 ish, which kind of makes sense. Kind of tracks for the most part.
But to be that young and like alone in the small town where you're just a pariah, mm-hmm. it's like very heartbreaking. And I think the most heartbreaking thing for me wasn't she makes like a bunch of dollhouses. She's like making the town like very kind of reminded me of Beetlejuice. There's like a couple of things that kind of felt like references. But she's mm-hmm. making the town so she can, I feel like she's a part of the town. But what I thought was actually kind of heartbreaking was she's practicing a waltz step dance moves mm-hmm. with, like, she gets packages in the mail, and clearly she's just made up her entire, like, two-story house. It's a huge house.
Beautiful farmhouse, yeah.
Huge, yeah, huge, bet, just land, plot of land.
Yeah.
But yeah, just like her doing the dance steps by herself and getting frustrated that she got them wrong, and it's just like, oh, she has nobody to dance with.
Yeah, and she wants to be a part of this town or do something with it, but she can't because of her past or whatever of the what's going on. But
which I don't even know is really justified. I mean,
yeah, and I think that's part of what I think the ending is about too. Yeah. There's a bit of a meaning there too. Yeah. Excellent sound design, of course, because there's literally no dialogue. Everything kind of made sense because they did a really interesting thing with like the aliens. They make noises, certain like off-putting noise to communicate to each other and stuff like that, or communicate in general. So I thought it was kind of fun.
They say yo a lot. Hey, like once I heard that the first time, I couldn't unhear it the rest of the movie, but it didn't affect the way I felt about the movie. But I thought it was like funnier. Yeah. Every time, like, yo, that's that's basically what they were saying. That and the way they contort their bodies and move, which I have a theory on. And obviously, their bodies are fragile, but they are very strong and have extreme telekinetic ability.
Mm-hmm. Yep. They take all kind of shapes and sizes, you know, like there's I don't want to spoil it, but yeah. they take all kind of different you know. It's not the same. They have like the first alien design I saw, I was like, wow, that's like pretty spot on alien. You know, cuz it had the big head, skinny body, huge eyes, but then it kind of evolves. There's like a couple of different types, and I guess that's like a hierarchy with what the, like, you know, the invasion that they're doing. There's like a hierarchy of aliens.
Yeah, maybe that's why I think I have a theory, but we'll wait until spoilers
mm-hmm.
as to why they're all kind of different shapes and sizes.
Yeah
I don't are we missing anything from aside from the first like 10 minutes of the movie? She goes into town and she's basically hiding from everybody.
Nobody likes her. Yeah.
And even the mailman, or maybe the mailman was just fucking around, but does this weird thing where he, like, he does like a basketball, like throws a package just to the ground in front of him and pretends to get cheers from like no crowd.
Yeah.
Which I have a feeling he's the first person to get up. I mean, he's the first person to get abducted for sure. And I feel like it was shortly after that.
Mm-hmm.
Because basically after that happens, I was gonna call her Pearl. What's her name? Bryn.
Bryn.
Yeah. Bryn is going into town and she gets frustrated because she sees like she thinks she didn't water the lawn right because part of it looks burnt.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm assuming that's like...
That's them arriving, yeah.
Or the mailman being taken.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, before we go into spoilers, I feel like spoilers is going to be most of the conversation. Yeah. Anything else to point out in terms of the movie?
She's hiding from everybody, right? And you know who Maude is? We're assuming her best friend from childhood runs into her parents, but she hides from them. And then she starts writing a letter to Maude saying it's been 10 years. I'll never forgive myself, blah, blah, blah. And then she mails a couple of packages, but not that letter, I don't think. But she's like hiding from everybody. And then a little bit later, this is after she gets her first alien encounter. She tries to go to the police and runs into Maude's parents, and the mom straight up spits in her face.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Which is kind of sad, and it's very reflective of the title of the movie. Like, nobody's going to help.
Exactly, yeah. She's pretty much on her own. And she pretty much is through this whole movie. And I also did a great effect with the light finding her. I thought that was really like tension, cool. The way they shot everything. I thought was excellent. Like they covered that house, I thought, very, very well. It was like geographically, I kind of understood where everybody was. Also, they did a great job of like putting the camera in places that I thought heightened fear moments, you know, especially in the beginning when it's like a home invasion at first, the first part with the first alien.
Yeah.
And then it kind of escalates after that. So, no, they were really great about filming and putting the camera in a place that put that sense of dread. And I honestly don't think I've ever seen, this is probably the most original alien invasion story I think I've ever seen. So, I'll say that.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, it was good. It was so entertaining.
Completely surprising. Cool. All right. Do you want to just get into spoilers?
Yes.
All right. Let's go to spoilers.
Wait! No. Stop. Stop. Stop talking, guys. Stop the podcast. Stop. Please stop the podcast. Because we're about to go into...
Spoilers.
They were aliens.
No, spoiler. Haven't cued the music. No, I'm just kidding.
That first encounter with the alien, though, so this is what makes this movie really great. She never makes a poor decision.
No, yeah.
Aside from, like, knocking something over, like, a creak in the fucking old house, she's like, fuck. Like, I don't know. She never makes a poor decision, though. Which I really appreciated.
Yeah, every decision she made was logical in terms of, like, she... No, the scene you're referring to is like she's up in the stairs. She sees the aliens already broken into her house, and then she steps back because she kind of sees what's going on a bit as the alien kind of rummages through the house, and then she creaks, and so the alien stops, and so she like takes her shoes off. So, yeah. And then she kind of just goes through the house, and then she's chased. She runs back into her bedroom. She hides under the bed. Weird, interesting detail that the aliens have like I don't know, little pudgy feet.
Fingers for feet.
Yeah. It's just weird.
But not like ape style like hands, like weird, like it looks like a bunch of like index and middle fingers for hands.
Yeah.
For hand feet.
They're not putting any, there's no weight to their feet. They don't have like, they're just walking on their tippy toes, I guess. Yeah. Is another way to describe it, but I don't know. That was interesting. Yeah. And she's able to survive by killing the alien, by stabbing it in the head.
With a lighthouse, I think, right? Or with something like a church.
One of her models, lighthouse, church bell tower thing. It had a bell, didn't it? Like a little ringing bell it.
Which, so it could that was like, we thought she was going to, I was wondering if this was like, she was going to die at some point.
Mm-hmm.
But her killing that thing, that alien, but not really, right? Like that alien didn't actually really die. So that's why I have a theory that these aliens, these are just like vessels that they've accumulated over like going through
right,
different worlds, because right, the aliens are actually little gross fucking sea urchin looking thingies, like
exactly. Yeah, that's yeah, a good description of it.
Like yeah, squiggly, like if sea urchins were tainted with the Marvel character Venom. Like just like yeah.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. That was their true form. Is that kind of yeah, track?
That's, you what know, it does, like, yeah.
Yeah.
So they can assimilate. So I don't think they have an idea of death. And via the director, they don't have a sense of grief, which is why they're so hung up on Bryn. And
okay.
They don't understand why they have such a hard time with her. Like,
I did get that sense too, that they were baffled. They were like, so the first alien dies or whatever, and then when the second one comes back, they send a smaller apish looking one, you know, like long arms.
Well,
that's they
sent like the regular one, the one that she ends up fighting at the end.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And but it, that one, even in the movie, seemed more curious about her.
Yes.
Than trying to just immediately capture her. So which I is think the opposite.
The higher, like the ones that you meet at the very end, I think that was one of them.
Yeah. Yeah, there's like a class of aliens. There's the ones that she first met, and then there's more of, I guess, the grunts, kind of soldiers with the longer, they have long arms, almost yeah, like mantis style arms,
praying mantis style arms. Felt more like a dog. I don't know if that makes sense.
Child, like, I thought like a child or dog. Yeah, it didn't seem. It was more just wanted to attack her. It was more vicious, had less thought, you know what I mean? Yeah, like it was more of attacking her. So
with all these like different personalities, it made me think, like, where's the movie from the alien's perspective? Like, what if, I feel like the first alien that attacks her was like, hey, I'm a newbie, but I think I can do it. Hey, this lady lives alone, she's like so far away from shit, you go take care of that, we believe in you. And then he's like, hey guys, I fucked up.
Yeah,
my body's back there somewhere, I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, and what happens after that? The second one appears, she runs away from it, and then we see the giant fucking version of the smaller one, which is awesome. You could totally see in the background it peering over the yeah, kind of barn area or shed. Yeah, work extra side home or whatever, and then you can totally see its head, and then it moves only to reveal it's this fucking huge 10 fucking 12 feet yeah, tall fucking dinosaur mantis, a long armed creature yeah, or some shit. So like, yeah, that was terrifying. She has to run from that.
And I mean, that one was a lucky one, because she was smart enough to go through the car, which I guess, like, luckily this alien was dumb enough to go through the car also, instead of like crawl over like it could have easily have done, and gets its foot stuck because it shoves its foot through the bottom of the car by accident.
Mm-hmm.
And then, oh yeah, she had like started collecting her little tools. That's what I was saying, is like very video game like. Like she finds mm-hmm, her lighter, she finds her like her Mac knife, which was really funny because that utility blade was dull as fuck. I like freeze framed it because I was like, why? Just change it out.
Yeah, it's a, yeah.
Yeah,
of course. Yeah,
I mean, I get it's a prop, but like this, there's nobody else in the scene, I'm sure she's not gonna hurt herself.
I literally had, sorry to interrupt, but I just literally had a thought, like when that happened, I was like, yeah, like if there was a true like home invasion, what do I have weapon wise to fight? Yeah, aside from the obvious knife shit, like it kind of made sense, and they play it for a laugh that she brought out like a hair straightener at first.
Yes,
before yeah, she's prepared, right? And then when she he knows that's the second, it becomes like she's not going to get any help, she goes back home, she's like, okay, well, I'm going to defend myself, I'm going to try to,
which, you know, I thought was like, what a weird like plot device where she has no real weapons in her house, in this huge,
her phone,
house,
or yeah,
like she's got like nothing. But then it occurred to me after the reveal at the very, very end of what her life has been like, she probably doesn't want anything like that around her.
Oh yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, you're right, absolutely. Yeah, that totally makes sense.
And she doesn't need a phone, so that's why she just has a landline.
Yeah,
because yep, nobody cares about her. Like
mm-hmm, she's pretty much by herself. Yeah. Because she, early on, we should mention that, like, she sitting at her, she visits the gravesite of her mother, I'm assuming, right?
Yes. So. Oh, and then, well, Maude also. So that's when the reveal Maude of Maude being well. Dead. Yeah.
Maude is her childhood friend. He's dead.
And that's where I saw she was born in 2000 and then died 2013.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where I got that she's probably 23-ish.
23. Yeah. Yeah. That makes sense. And that they, of course, like the reason why she's a pariah in the town is because she's she killed her friend in an accident, right? She was more just upset, and we come to find out.
Was she upset? That's what I'm saying. It straight up looked like she was like, she fell because Maude pushed her, and then she looked up and she saw this rock. She was like, holy shit, look at this fucking rock. And she turned around and Maude got in the way with her head and died. That's what happened. She didn't hit her.
It's the victim's fault. Yeah, John. Yeah.
She likes
Don't
rocks,
be gaslighting.
Whatever.
Don't be gaslighting poor Maude about her victimism. Yeah.
But that was an interesting... So I think that's the point where these aliens, because this is after she killed that second one, and she thought she was finally getting away, and then they shoved, or she was finally caught, and they put the sea urchin thingy in her mouth, and it went, which this has to connect to their brain to really like tap into those memories. So I think they were trying to siphon her memories of who this lady was in the picture, like that one curious alien. That clearly could have killed Maude Bryn at any point, but was like very curious about her and her.
Yeah,
grief.
Why is she fighting back? Yeah, why
is she so different from all the other humans they've met? So I think they're trying to understand that part of humanity. So she's apologizing to Maude in her dream or like state.
And yeah, one of the few lines spoken. Yeah. I'm sorry, Maude. Yeah.
The point when she realizes, like, I know this isn't real. I mean...
Yeah, she must have known it wasn't real. And they do a great job of, like, visually showing that, like, it's an older version of Maude, but it's, like, in shadows. She's not getting a clear picture of her because there's no memory of her. This person doesn't exist, you know?
It doesn't exist. And also, I think I rewatched that part too because I was like, wow, what a, like an interesting... So yeah, I think it is that. But I think it's also at that point, she's like, no, this isn't Maude. I know it's not Maude because Maude never became older. Mm-hmm. Sorry. And so that's why it started getting blurry because she started rejecting the sea urchin thingy.
Yeah, and... From what I gather, also, we can assume that the other people probably took to it. You know what I mean? They weren't so, you know, defiant against this sort of, like a body. Is it basically, I see, like, this part of the movie is like an Invasion of Body Snatchers movie. Like, what if the Invasion of Body Snatchers movie happened? Pod people type thing, take over their entire body.
Night of the Creeps. Atkins, handsome.
Yeah.
Sex bot.
Fuck boy.
Tom Atkins.
Yeah. So she, of course, rejects it because I think they try to implant in her these like calming memories or some sort of thing that would make her obedient
assimilate
to it. So she rejects it, takes it, you know, rips it out of her mouth, and tries to outrun them again, I guess. I don't remember every detail. Leading up to her, the next
she
part.
She gets spat out of the spaceship again. She like wakes up in the middle of a road somewhere.
And, That's right. Yeah, that's right.
Which again, the design of the spaceships was fucking cool too. You look straight up at it a couple of times, like that looks really rad.
It's like layered. It looked like your classic saucer, but there was like different. Look like with the lights coming out of it, it was like layered.
Yeah.
Down or something.
And then would collapse back into itself to become
collapse back into itself. Yeah.
It was very cool. But she also sees for a second when she spits out that thingy. There you start to see like blood vessels and veins and shit form into like a person behind the beam.
And then
you realize later that they made another Bryn, I guess, so they can be like, well, we'll just take over her body. And that Bryn, because that would surprise the shit out of me too, is able to stab real Bryn a couple of times. But then luckily, like, utility knife finally comes into play, which
dollar utility knives
for a little while there, I was like, yo girl, you have like these weapons, right? Where are you using them?
Yeah, well, I mean, that's she uses it to kill it. But yeah, I mean, I could think, like, if I saw like an exact copy of myself, I would be like, oh, what the fuck?
I'd be dumbfounded. I don't know what I would do. Yeah, I'd be like, what the flying fuck? Like, is this real? I don't know. What the fuck's real at this point? I just imagine my friend was still alive after 10 years.
I'm terrified but attracted to my alien self. <Just kidding. laughs>
Yeah, she's like, it's not gay if... And then she's like, wait a second. I don't care if it is gay. I'm
gonna fuck myself. I have no friends. but yeah, so she gets up killing... I'm assuming they're making like these pod people for the entire... world, right? For for the little sea urchin things that are, so they can live on the planet, basically, is what I'm gathering.
Yeah, and I also think that developed new body of Bryn is like a one-off on that planet, and it kind of also explains how probably these aliens never die. So that's why they don't have an idea of grief, because they just make a new body.
Exactly. Yeah, they kind of just go to host, 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 and they've never had this problem before. That tracks. Yeah, that makes sense. So the director said that about the aliens not having any sense of grief or never experienced it.
And also they probably answer to a higher power of them, when you kind of briefly see that when touching her head, trying to like understand, like the main big alien. I mean, they're not big. Like, the, it is interesting that the highest up aliens that we visually see are the most humanoid looking ones. Kind of like, they're not, they don't have like huge arms or anything like that. They're just very like, they kind of reminded me of what the fuck's the name of that Marvel villain?
The one with the big head.
Ebony Maw, something Maw. Thanos is like number one dude, the guy with the telekinetic power. Something.
Okay, I can't even talk about. I can't.
Tony Stark calls him Squidward the first time they meet.
It's Squidward, yeah. Essentially, yeah, yeah.
They kind of look like that. And then at some point when they can't seem to understand or control Bryn, they all point up and look, and then there's all these lights shooting down, very Space Odyssey. So I'm assuming that's them asking whatever the higher power they have to answer to is like, what's the decision? And then it cuts to like Maud. I keep calling her Maud. She's like, I think a Harold and Maud, and then it just gets stuck in my brain.
Yeah.
What Bryn comes to, and then she just is alive without a alien host. And then the end of the movie is her back in society, and everybody's super nice to her, even though they're all aliened up. And she's
pretty much
so happy.
Yeah, she's able to live. That scene is kind of the one I was like, I don't think people are gonna like this at all. But because it's a very wild idea, that the fact that the humans that were on Earth never gave her the empathy it took creatures from another planet, an alien invasion, who actually empathized with her and forgave her. And she was able to kind of live with in the society the way she wanted. Cause she ends up, I guess she did have a crush on her neighbor, is what I gather too. Yeah, a similar aged boy or something. But he was like, fuck you, I have nothing to do with you. And then, but in this reality, now that the aliens have taken over and put all their little creatures and everybody, the pod people, she's able to, she's basically living in the society with the pod people happily ever after.
Happily, so, and they're all happy to, you know, oblige her in that too. A couple of things. I feel like it is the alien race kind of giving her the second chance that she always really did deserve. Like, there was no reason to punish herself for something that was an accident. Because, I mean, she hit her friend in the head with a rock. It wasn't... She never intended to murder her friend.
Yeah.
but for the entire town to just like really shit on her the entire time, and then for her to lose her mom and then just be stuck in this house alone, it wasn't fair.
Yeah, but exactly.
Her being able to have closure through the aliens, I think, helped the aliens be like, this is super interesting. Let her go, and we're just going to study her. I think that's what the whole point of that is. We're just study sure. what makes her happy and understand humanity.
A less ambiguous.
Because we don't have a sense of grief or any, like, I'm assuming more emotions, too.
They found her to be high of intelligence, you know, like, so. Yeah, that was fucking crazy.
Because then there's, they pull away from her dancing in this town square with everybody super happy to see her. And then you see that it was a very successful alien invasion because there are saucers everywhere.
Yeah. And she's happy. She's able to live among people again. So what a, like, yeah, dude, at every turn, this movie was unpredictable, dude. Because literally when she was abducted, I looked at the time and I was like, dude, there's still like 30 more minutes of this movie. Holy
shit.
That's
exactly what I thought.
What the fuck is going to happen? Yeah.
I was like, is this going to be some AI bullshit? Are they humans? Or not humans, but like advanced technology?
Who's the blue fairy? Where's Jude Law at?
Come on, bring in Chris Rock for 2 seconds. Come on.
Yeah. Dude, that movie was wild, dude. But yeah, no, excellent. Cool. Do you have any other thoughts before we rate it?
No.
Fascinating movie.
I think so. Yeah, it's fucking great.
Yeah, absolutely fascinating.
Man, it's gonna be tough to rate this one too, actually.
Yeah. Did you have any issues with it's kind of a wild left turn decisions? Do you think that struck you? Because it's like we waxed so poetically about like all the details of it, which were fun, but is there anything you didn't like?
No, not really. I mean, I do see what you're saying. Like people probably be annoyed by the ambiguous ending, but if you just take it at face value, though it is the end of humanity, it is a very happy ending for her, and you never get a happy ending for a character like that in an alien invasion movie.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even Ripley fucking jumped into a vat of lava at some point. Like,
this is the Arnold Schwarzenegger hasta la vista finger thumb in the lava scene.
Yeah. So I don't know. Yeah, fantastic.
Okay, cool. All right, John, how many sexy spooky bones do you want to give it?
Don't do that. Just rate the movie. I'm going to give No One Will Save You. Nine sexy spooky bones.
Yeah. I was almost going to say eight too, but yeah, no, nine. I didn't really have a lot of issues with this movie. No, actually, you want to show it to my fiance. You should have watched this with me.
At no point is it boring whatsoever. Like you said, it's very little dialogue. It's just great.
Yeah, and I think this what's great also about this movie is that it's going to spark a lot of conversation too. Like, you know, just what's going on in this movie? This happened. This, you know, what's this? What's that? What does this mean? Like I said, I feel like this writer director, Brian Dunfield, he crafted a great movie. Like, really surprised. And I feel like he had a clear vision of what he wanted for this movie. Totally unique, unexpected. Surprised at how good it was. I did hear it was good, but I'm surprised at how good it actually was.
Because I think we're on the same page. If like, oh, it's a Hulu thing. Let's see.
There is a certain type. Yeah. We'll get to it. Let's put it on the list. Maybe. Alrighty.
And I'm also going to say this was... I'm sorry, Jordan Peele. Like, I feel like this is what Nope should have been more like.
Thank you. Yeah. I wasn't a big fan of Nope, but I understand the filmmaking is high. Like, it's a beautifully crafted movie.
Yeah.
You know, but this I felt was more clear and original. While Nope was, I thought, was a little obtuse at times and difficult to follow and understand. I understand that it's by design. I know I understand that was intention. It just didn't like Blank. Hit. It didn't hit. Yeah, it didn't exactly hit with me. So cool. All right, guys, gals, non-binary pals. Thank you for listening. And as always,
yo.
Oh no, alien attack.
That's Alien 4. Stay spooky.